Can I just say, first of all, what a great privilege it is to be speaking here today. Thank you very much. That is very, very nice of you. It's a great privilege to be speaking here today. I've heard a lot about this particular seminary, and from my side of things, obviously without any bias or anything else, but it is very well known for many things. Among them, it's very, very well known for being extremely warm and friendly, and everybody here is extremely nice, which is actually why I agreed to speak here, because usually people swear at me during my talks. So I'm happy that at least somebody here will at least be a little bit kind. I'm going to just discuss, in the very short amount of time that we have, I'm going to just discuss a slightly more complicated piece which comes from Rav Yerucham Levavitz, and he discusses a question, which is it possible that a person can really change? Is it possible that people can change? In other words, is life just a series of managing who you are? At the moment when you were born, you are like this. This is who you are, and your life is simply about managing the individual that you are. Or do we believe that a person can actually radically change themselves? Let's say, for example, a person is born with anger issues. So if a person is born angry, do we believe that life is just a series of trying to manage that angry person that you always are? Or do we believe that you can actually flip and turn from an angry person to a non-angry person? Or do we believe that, you know, you can just take that particular anger that you have, you can lock it up, and you can make sure that it never comes out? Almost never. In fact, it may never ever come out. But you're the same angry person that you always were, you just know how to keep it on a very short leash. Or do we believe that you can actually get rid of your anger? You could be an angry person, and by various different ways and means and methods, you could actually change from being angry to non-angry, as an example. So, Rav Yerucham discusses this in a very famous story, which deals with... I'm on the time here. Yeah. I know what's coming after this. A very, very famous story with Yaakov, and he meets his brother Esav. And the Torah tells us that he prepares, it's not what you're thinking, I know what you're thinking, it's not what you're thinking. He prepares for this in three ways. He prepares to meet his brother, because he's not quite sure of his intentions. So he prepares to meet him with a gift. He sends him a gift. He prepares with davening. He prays. Davens to Hashem. And he also prepares for war. And the Torah tells us, goes into detail of exactly what happens, and goes into quite a lot of detail of exactly how he does all three of those things. But what's interesting is that if you look at the amount of time that which the Torah gives to each of these three areas, how much time he prepares for war, how much time does he prepare for davening, how much time does he prepare for the gift, we see that they're very different. So the Torah tells us, for war, the Torah dedicates two psukim, two verses, which deal with exactly what he did and how he prepared for war. The Torah says about his prayer, about his davening, about how he davened to Hashem, so there was four verses, which tell us exactly what his prayer was, and exactly what he wanted to try and achieve and accomplish through his prayer. And a staggering nine verses, nine psukim in the Torah, tell us exactly what it was, exactly in microscopic detail, of exactly what this gift was, and not just what it was, but how it was presented to him, and the exact measurements and space there were between each particular thing that was given to Esav. It's an exact amount. And the question which is asked is, why do we care? Why do we care? Why do we care how exact the measurements were? Why does it go into so much detail with the gift that was given from Yaakov to Esav? Why does the Torah go into so much detail? So the Ramban asks this question, and the Ramban says, basically, in four words, he says, the reason why the Torah goes into so much detail is because Ein Somchim Al Hanes. We do not rely on miracles. We don't rely on miracles. We have to make sure that we don't ever rely on miracles. And so therefore, when Yaakov gave over this gift to Esav, he was trying to appease him. And apparently what the Ramban seems to be saying is that if he hadn't have given the gift, and he would have just relied on prayer and war, so he would have been relying on a miracle, on Esav's good nature to just turn the whole thing around. And if you're relying on miracles, that's not a good thing. We don't rely on miracles. So therefore, in order to him not to rely on a miracle, so he gave this whole gift and gave a huge amount just to teach us this important lesson that in life, you do not rely on miracles. Rav Yerucham Levavitz, in Das Chochma Musa, in the very first paragraph almost, so he asks a question, which is, why is that relying on a miracle? Let's assume that you have somebody that breaks into someone's house. And a person breaks in, so they've got a gun, and the person happens to be sitting there. Didn't anticipate the person was sitting there. They thought it was 3 a.m, everyone's up, you know, sleeping. And this guy is sitting right there. So, okay, now he's got a gun. Now he's been seen. So he points the gun at the guy, and the guy begs, falls down to his knees, and begs for his life. And he begs and he says, please, please, please don't kill me. Please, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have been here. I won't tell anybody. And he starts taking out pictures of his family. He says, please, look, these are pictures of my family. Look at these kids. Please don't shoot me. Please don't kill me. And he begs and he pleads for his life. And the guy, maybe he's got kids himself. And he looks at this guy, this pathetic, wretched individual. And he says, you know what? Fine. I'm not going to kill you. I'm not going to kill you. And he walks out and he leaves. Did we just witness a miracle? Would you consider that was an incredible miracle? I don't think we can say that's a miracle. We might say, wow, great story. But would we say, that is a miraculous event? Miracle? I mean, you spoke to the guy, you were passionate, you were evocative, you know, you were emotional, you really like managed to reach the guy, you reached his heart. Like, we've all got a heart. And sometimes it takes a little longer to reach certain peoples than others. But you reached him. You reached him. Is that a miracle? Another example. You have two brothers that have not spoken to each other for 20 years. They had some fight over whatever it is, whatever the story is. And eventually, Erev Yom Kippur, one of the brothers, he says, you know what? I haven't spoken. It's my brother. And I haven't spoken to him for 20 years. So he takes a cake and takes down some whiskey and he goes to his brother's house, he knocks on the door, his brother says, what do you want? He says, you know what, I've just realized, like we're brothers. You know, it's like, you know, this is 20 years, we haven't spoken. Whatever it is that I've done, I'm really, really sorry. I'm really sorry, I feel bad. Please, please forgive me. If the brother says, okay, you know, I forgive you, it's been 20 years, I forgive you. Was that a miracle that we just witnessed? Did we just witness, wow, that's incredible, what a miracle. That's not a miracle, like that's pretty normal. When we plug this in, we said that Yaakov, he had to send the gift to Esav. Because if he hadn't have sent the gift, the Ramban says, you know what would have happened? You'd be witnessing the miraculous. That would have been miraculous if he'd have just, you know, been appeased just by praying to God and relying on war. If he hadn't sent the gift, that would have been a miracle. And we don't rely on miracles. Is that a miracle? I mean, he sent them a gift. They were brothers. They hadn't spoken in a very long time. He sent them a gift. He said, I'm sorry. You know, it's over. Well, that was a miraculous event. If he hadn't have sent that, oh, you'd have been relying on a miracle. Is that a miracle? That's not a miracle. Two brothers, they would have made up. Okay, finished. Rav Yerucham says that actually it is a miracle because there was no way that Esav was ever going to listen to Yaakov. He was never ever going to listen. And the fact is is that people normally and naturally don't change. People don't change. Normally and naturally, people do not change. If you're asking to change somebody's natural tendencies, their normal characteristics, the person that they were born to be, to change that, it's not happening. It is not normal, it's not natural. A person is locked in. At the moment of birth, you are locked into the person who you were born to become. Normally and naturally, people do not change. You may be able to manage the situation of who you are, but normally and naturally, people don't change. If you want a really, what I feel, is a really evocative picture of what this looks like. There's a great story with Yaakov later on, so he decided he was with his father-in-law, he was with Lavan, and he had his kids and his wives were there, and they decided that they had to leave. And as a certain plan, without going into too much detail, but a certain plan, they decided they were going to leave, and they weren't going to tell him when they were going, or in fact that they were going to go, and they left. And Lavan hears about this, so he chases after them, and he's not very happy at all. And he starts to accuse Yaakov of various different things. And eventually, we find what if you really read this before, and I'm going to read it now, and I'll read it and translate it, and it's quite an amazing piece when you actually look at it again afterwards. If anyone that wants the reference for it, it's chapter 31, and we're going to start with verse 36. And it's a really amazing piece. It's really amazing when you look at it, and you look at this speech, and this powerful, powerful speech, a really powerful speech that Yaakov gives to Lavan. He feels that Lavan's not being respectful for him. And he decides to tell him some home truths. And he says, Vayichal Yaakov, Vayarev Belavan. Yaakov gets very, very upset. Vayan Yaakov, and he says, Vayemel Lavan, Ma Pishi, Ma Chatosi Kigdonata Acharaya. What is my sin? What have I done wrong that you've just come and chased me like this? And he starts to tell him that, you know what, you've started to mess around with all of my stuff. And he says that Zeh Esrim Shana, these last 20 years, Anoichi Imach, I've been with you. Rechelecha ve'izecha lo shikelu. None of your goats and none of your cattle was ever miscarried during the time when I was looking after them. Ve'elei tzoncha lo yachalti, and the rams of your flock, I didn't touch any of them. Trefe lo hivesi elecha, I never brought any animal that had anything wrong with it. Anoichi achatena miyadi tvakshena, you made me pay for it. If anything happened to any of my animals while I was under my care, while I was shepherding them, I had to give the cost for that back later. Whether it was stolen during the day or it was stolen during the night, that during the day I was there was like this terrible, terrible heat that used to burn me, an awful freezing cold at night, this ice used to just bite through me, and sleep was far away from my eyes for the last 20 years. Zeli Esrim Shana, this is what it's been like for the last 20 years of Beisecha in your house. And he starts to tell him that I worked for you, Avaraticha Esrim Abayasre Shana Beshtebenosecha, I worked for 14 years for your two daughters, Veshashanim Betzonecha, another 6 years for your cattle, Betachleif Es Muskurtai Eseris Moinim, and you changed the conditions of my financial arrangements tens and tens of times. And he starts to tell him, look at all these terrible things that you've done, my life has been hell with you here. It's been awful. And Lavan, after hearing this impassioned speech, Lavan says, Vayome Lavan, Lavan says to him, Habanois Benoisai, your daughters, they're mine. Vahabonim, and your sons, Bonai, they're also mine. Vahatsoin, and your cattle that's right over here, Tsoini, that's mine. Vachol Asher Atal Royer, everything that you can see, Lihu, that's mine too. Yaakov gave him this incredibly impassioned speech. He spoke to him from his heart. He's emotional. He told him home truths. And what difference did it make to Lavan? Absolutely none. Lovan was completely unmoved by this whole event. It didn't make any difference to him at all. Why doesn't it make any difference? Because people don't change. People do not normally and naturally change. If that wasn't bad enough, the fact is that the Jewish people, who normally and naturally don't change, Jewish people don't change more than most other people. And that's not Lashon Hara about the Jewish people. And I could never say such a thing. I couldn't say such a thing. I have no authority to say that. I wouldn't even know if it was true. But God said it, so I didn't have to. God says the Jewish people are an Am Kishei Oref. They are a stubborn, stiff-necked people. We don't like to change. We don't. The basic fact is that human beings, and Jewish people particularly, change is a very difficult thing to do. That's quite a bleak picture. But for most people, it's quite accurate. One of the greatest programs for changing is Alcoholics Anonymous. And the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that it is so absolutely true. Somebody will get up and say, you know, my name is Johnny Ross, and I'm an alcoholic. I just haven't had a drink for 25 years. And that's absolutely correct. They're not changing who they are. I've managed to manage myself. I've got to a situation where I can manage myself, and I'm an alcoholic who doesn't drink, but an alcoholic nonetheless. And in the secular world, that is absolutely accurate. Now, what's good for us is that we don't live according to those rules. We have something which is not normal and natural. Okay, what I've been describing up until now is the normal world, is the natural world. That is normal and natural. But we don't live according to normal and natural rules. We have access to something which is not normal and it's not natural. It is super normal and it's supernatural. When we have access to Torah, we have the capacity to change. And the more access that we have to Torah, the greater are our capabilities of changing ourselves entirely. If I had more time and you didn't have supper, I'll tell you exactly how that works, but unfortunately it's outside of the scope of this. We have the capacity to change because we tap into something which is outside of ourselves, outside of anything to do with this world. If we're locked into this world, we'll always be the same. But if we can manage to lock into something which is greater than ourselves, something which is beyond nature, beyond what is normal, then we have the capacity to change radically, and I'm talking completely. My Rebbe was once sitting with one of the greatest sages of the generation, unfortunately not alive anymore, Rav Shlomo Volber. And somebody came and asked Rav Volber a question. And they said that they used to be not religious. And now they've become much more religious and everything else. And they wanted to know, to what extent should they tell their children about the kind of person that they used to be? Like, how much graphic detail do they go into? Like, should I just completely, like, you know, just tell them I was always religious? Should I go into a bit of detail? Should I tell them everything? Should I tell them some things? And Rav Volber said, one sentence, he said, you know, sometimes it's worth lying to your children. And when my Rav said he heard that, and he fell off his chair. That's just something, I lie to your children. And Rav Volber smiled, and he said the following. He said, sometimes it's worth telling your children that you never used to be religious, even if you did, because children need to understand that a person can change. Children need to understand that a person can change, that you can change. But obviously, he didn't mean lie to your kids. If you've been great all this time, you don't have to lie to them. But he wanted to give over the impression that everyone needs to know. It's a message that everybody needs to know, is that I can change. My son, many years ago, he was about six, and I used to ask him periodically what it is that he wanted to be when he grew up. And he always told me he wanted to be the same thing. He always said he wanted to be a Talmud Chacham, he wanted to be a great Torah scholar. So I used to always say to him, you know what, no pressure. But if you end up being a Talmud Chacham, if you end up being a great Torah scholar, there will be nobody on planet Earth that will be prouder than I am. But you know what, there's no pressure. You be whatever you want. And one day, I was sitting on his bed, and he said to me, Abba, I want to ask you something. When you were my age, did you also want to be a Talmud Chacham? Did you also want to be a great Torah scholar? So, the rule is, despite what Revolver said, I don't lie to my kids. On the other hand, I can't exactly tell them the truth, because when I was his age, I wanted to be a rock star, and he doesn't know what a rock star is. He's religious. So, I didn't know what to say to him. And I was, in my little sort of like memory chart, I was flipping through tons and tons of different answers, and as each one came up, I rejected them straight out of hand. It's like, no, can't say that, no, can't say that, no, that's not quite true, that's not going to work. And millions of answers kept coming up, and eventually, I decided on one answer, which is, I said, it's a bit weak, okay, I'm warning you now, it's a bit weak. But I said, yes, I did. Let me tell you the rationale before you think bad of me. I said, yes, I did. I did want to be a great Torah scholar. My rationale was, is that a human being is made up of a body and a soul, and my body definitely didn't want to be a great Torah scholar, or even a minor one, but my soul definitely did. And so therefore, my soul is really the main part of who we are. Who we really are is our soul. So therefore, who I really wanted to be a great Torah. I said it was weak, okay? I did say that. So I said, yes. So I looked him square in the eye, and I said, yes, I absolutely, when I was your age, I wanted to be a great Torah scholar. And he looked at me with the sweet innocence of a six-year-old, and he said, so why didn't you ever become one? And I said, and that lasted about an hour. And then I said, well, you have to understand. So I go, you know, your school is great, you know, as I prayed to God to give me a heart attack. I said, you know what, your school is great. You know, your school, you learn about Shabbos. I said, I didn't learn about Shabbos in my school. He said, you didn't learn about Shabbos? I said, no. I said, you know, your school is so good. You know, you learn about kashrus? Yeah, I didn't know anything about kashrus in my school. He said, Abby, you didn't know about kashrus in your school? I said, no. So he looked at me and he said, okay, but you've been out of school for ages now. Why haven't you become a great Torah scholar since you left school? And I said, yeah, good question. He gets it from my wife, this you know, insightful look at people. So I said, you know what? And I gave him the only answer that I felt was absolutely genuine and completely true, which is, you know, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. And the truth is, I'm still working on it. But I think what really, really helps in order for us to be able to have like that, we're working on it, what really, really helps is to have that picture in our mind of what it is that we'd like to become. What is it that we would like to become? Based on the fact that we can change. We can change. So what is it that we would like to become? What is that figure? What's that vision that we have in our heads? Like, who would we really like to be? Because after 120 years, when you look at yourself in the mirror, if you can at that age, I don't know, but if you can look at yourself in the mirror at that age, you will see everything you always wanted to be looking back at you. A person always will be the choices that they make. And the choices that you make, this is it. This is the person you always wanted to be. And that person that you've always wanted to be, you are now stuck with. So you've got an incredibly wonderful opportunity, which is in some cases, I don't say in all cases, but in some cases, is wasted on you because you're too young. You know, this opportunity that you have right now, where you've taken time off to study, to learn about yourselves, to learn about your Jewish identity, to learn about your religion and your Judaism, like, this is precious golden time. Like, this is probably the most important time that is going to define and shape the rest of your life of exactly who you're going to be straight after you leave here. And there shouldn't be a single moment that you go through your day where you're not really trying to grab every single opportunity to trying to really delve into that. This doesn't happen afterwards. Once you get into that world, when you go into college and you get into university and then you start getting a job and you start thinking about who you're going to marry and then you start raising kids, it's way too late. Like, this is the most important year of your life. This is it. And you've got that ability to change and mold and shape yourself into somebody absolutely incredible. And I really, really hope that all of you appreciate what that opportunity is And make sure that you've got that vision in your head. You've got time now that you will never have again. Take a little bit of time, a little bit of thought, and just think, who would I want to be? Like, who's that person? What's that vision in my head? Who do I want looking back at me after 120 years? And then when you've figured out where that road's going, the question you have to ask yourself is, what is the next incremental step that I can take to get there? What is the next tiny, tiny, microscopic little step that I can take? Don't do that by yourselves. You've got Rabbonim here, who, that's their job. Their job is to manage your microscopic incremental step. So you now have to make it up as you go along. But make sure that you use this opportunity to change yourself, to recreate yourself, and make yourself into the best human being that you possibly can. I finished 36 seconds early. I wish you all a wonderful day.
Thank you.